you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Life Hacker Podcast for September 20th. This week we're going to be talking about Windows 8 tablets, automating and scheduling all of your downloads, the problems with Spotify and Audio, and how you can effectively get paid to ditch your wireless carrier and get a new iPhone.
We're also answering your questions about formatting your drives for a Hackintosh, keeping your desktop layout in sync among many computers, and a PlayStation Network identity crisis.
And as usual, we'll be going through our favorite downloads of the week. So, let's get started. All right, let's start with the news.
iOS 6 came out.
iOS 6 came out, and it's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly, so I've updated on my iPod Touch, but I didn't want to lose my jailbreak on my iPhone, so I haven't updated yet. And honestly, I'm not really in a rush to update, especially with the fact that, I mean, the whole thing kind of seemed like it was, I don't want to say half-assed, but Passbook came out, and like, first it didn't work, and now that was the thing I was really excited about, and like there are only a few things that still support it, and you know, the Maps app is apparently horrible, which is the only thing I was really looking forward to.
I was thinking that we really shouldn't even talk about iOS 6, but there have been so many problems with it. I mean, because we've already gone over like, oh, this is what's coming in
iOS
6.
we've already talked about what's coming, so we're not going to do any of that.
Yeah,
but I think it's safe to say we were both a little disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just pointed. I wasn't expecting anything, and I guess it's a little worse than I thought it would be, but only because of Maps. And I'm not really upset about Maps, but after seeing how upset everyone else is, I'm kind of, I guess, I agree with their problems. Like, if I had those problems, they'd be bad. I mean, what's been happening, as you know, is the Maps app is giving people wrong directions. It's saying some places exist in lakes. The earth is a silver ball.
Yeah, you know, the reason it's a bummer to me is because that's the only thing I was excited about. I really don't like Waze. It gives me bad directions a lot. I was hoping that Apple would do it right. Guess now I'm stuck waiting for Google to come out with their iOS app, maybe.
Yeah. I was picking up a friend at the airport. This is my only experience with Maps. I was picking up a friend at the airport, and I know how to get to the airport, but we used iOS 6 anyway, and it took me right to a hole in the middle of the airport that was very close to where I needed to be, but I couldn't get across because there was a hole. And so I had to drive 6.5 miles around the airport to get where I needed to be, because it took me to the wrong side of it.
It's stuff like that that drives me crazy, and it's stuff like that that makes me miss Android, which was so awesome at the nav. Anyway, we have gone over a lot of stuff on the site to getting used to some of the new iOS 6 features and maybe fixing some of the quirks. I know that we're actually going to be doing more as the week progresses, so you can check out. We'll have a link to the show notes for a lot of our iOS 6 coverage, but definitely keep an eye on the site because I know of a few other things that are coming out soon that will help ease more worries.
Well, we have... we've got on Saturday we have secret features that make iOS 6 a little bit more exciting than what has been announced, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Because
there
are some little things that are like, oh, Apple did something that doesn't piss me off.
But we'll talk about that next week.
Yes, next week. However, there are things that we do know about that are coming to improve some of the features that people have been complaining about.
Yes.
And we'll talk about those when they happen, but be mad now. No, it's going to get better.
Yep. And hopefully the jailbreak won't take too long. So if you're a jailbreaker, that's at least good news.
Well, if it doesn't take too long.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway.
Let's stop talking about this.
On to something more exciting and less Apple related. Yeah. Last week, immediately after we recorded the podcast, I got to go test a real Windows 8 tablet.
How
okay,
was it?
Well, so, okay. Actually, I wasn't a real Windows 8 tablet, but I got to test Windows 8 on a tablet. It wasn't one of the new tablets that Windows 8 is going to come shipped on. You know, it wasn't Windows RT or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I got to actually see what Windows 8 is like with touch, and it's awesome. You know, one of the reasons I didn't want to talk about kind of that half of Windows 8 when it first was announced was that you can see the features, and that's all well and good, but you can't really know what it's going to be like until you use it. And this is something I've just learned with Android time and time again. It's like when the Android tablets came out, I was like, oh, these are kind of laggy and crappy, and it was a huge disappointment. Windows was not like that. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly smooth. The touch gestures, it kind of reminded me of WebOS in the sense that the touch gestures aren't always super intuitive. You can't, it's not like the first thing you think of is the correct gesture, but once you learn the gestures, they're mm-hmm. really nice and they're really handy.
That's good.
And you know, obviously going through the Metro interface is all designed around touch, so that's very nice. But what I was really surprised about was that when you go to the traditional Windows desktop on your tablet, mm-hmm. that's actually really nice in touch too. I was shocked to find that it was really easy to move windows around and resize windows just by like tapping and dragging. And the new ribbon in Windows Explorer and Microsoft Office and all those things, you know, a lot of people hate on the ribbon a lot, but this is where the ribbon is going to shine, I think. It's for those of you that don't know, because I know Dachis was confused by me mentioning the ribbon last week, because apparently he hasn't used Windows since 1998. The ribbon...
2006.
The ribbon is Microsoft's new toolbar that they introduced a couple versions ago in Microsoft Office. Mm-hmm. It has very large buttons for things like cut, copy, paste, fonts. And it was supposed to make it a little bit easier to use for maybe people who weren't so tech savvy and didn't want to go digging through menus. But I think where it's really going to shine for all of us is in this touch-centric interface, or rather in the non-touch-centric interface. If you leave the Metro, I'm using air quotes because it's not supposed to be called that anymore, but if you leave the Metro interface and go to the desktop, apps like Windows Explorer and Microsoft Office are still going to be fairly touch-friendly because they have those really big graphical buttons in the toolbar. So even though it's designed for the desktop, I found that it was quite easy to use.
Okay, so it's easy to touch. What I'm curious about is you use this for a prolonged amount of time. You're doing work all day, and you have to touch stuff on the screen, or you want to touch stuff on the screen. I wonder if your arms get tired. I mean, it's good probably that you're getting exercise at your desk, but you're moving all over the place.
Yeah, so a few things on that. I still think that if you're doing real work on it, you're not going to be doing it on the tablet. You're going to have a Bluetooth keyboard. And so I actually got to see one of the new Bluetooth keyboards mm-hmm. and mice that Microsoft is releasing alongside it. And they're both pretty sweet.
But you're still going to touch the screen though, right? I mean, even if you're using a mouse and keyboard?
Well, if you're using a mouse, you're not going to touch the screen.
When you use it? I thought the idea is you use both.
The idea is this. And this is how I see it. I see it more like the Asus Transform mm-hmm. for Android, which was that you can use it as a tablet, and that's really great for your reading and your casual couch web browsing and things like that where you're holding it in your hand. But if you're going to sit there and do real work, you dock it to a keyboard, or you use this keyboard that Microsoft showed me, which has a little cover that you take it off and it turns into a dock. And mm-hmm. as soon as you take it off, it immediately pairs with the tablet. It's very nicely done. Mm-hmm. And then you're able to work like a traditional laptop with that. You're not going to be, if you're doing, you know, it's no different than current tablets. You're not going to be, or rather, you're not, when you use it as a tablet, you're not going to be using it any differently than you do current tablets.
Okay, so they're not trying to make some hybrid monster here. It's like you use it, it's a tablet or it's a computer. You choose one and go with it.
Yes, I think that's absolutely what it is. And I think what's nice about the touch on the desktop isn't that you could do serious work with touch necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's that like, oh crap, I need to open this document really quickly, or like, oh, I don't know where I put that file. I got to drop back down to the desktop and go with something mm-hmm. more familiar and like actually look through the file system. I can do that without having to actually pull out the mouse and keyboard just for that quick task.
So you're going to have a tablet, but you don't have to ditch your computer.
Exactly. It's one of those things that I think is just going to be useful in like every situation. And I think this is going to be the perfect bridge between tablets and laptops, especially because they are coming out with an Asus Transform-like device for it, from what I've seen. Asus is coming out with, for those of you who don't know, again, the Asus Transform, or the Windows version, I believe, is called the Asus 600, is basically a netbook that you can detach the monitor and it turns into a tablet, like a little iPad kind of thing. So that's what I think it's going to be great for. But I was happy to see that the gestures work nicely and that you know, for the most part, it was very smooth and easy to use, because that was the one thing I was just a little bit nervous about.
That's cool.
So now we can rest easier.
And I'm when are these supposed to come out? When's Windows 8 coming out?
Windows
and all
8
this stuff?
Is coming out at the end of October, I believe.
Okay, that's not too
so,
far off.
And I'm sure they're going to launch with a number of tablets alongside it. And I believe the, you know, the press restrictions on all the OEMs like HP and whoever else just lifted. So they've been all announcing that for the past week about.
Oh, so are we going to start seeing prices and all that stuff?
I think so. We already are. If you go check out some of the news sites, you'll see that like HP has announced a few tablets and so have a few other people. But yeah, and I think a lot of things are going to launch alongside Windows 8. So that's when the market's really going to open up.
Cool.
So if you're in the market for a tablet, guys, I highly recommend waiting until these are out and checking them out, because there are some things about Windows 8 that are really nice on a tablet, I gotta say. Anyway, so that I just had to share my experience, since it wasn't something that we usually write about, but it's something that I feel needed to be said, since it is a big part of what Windows 8 is meant to be.
Cool. So this week also, something that I looked at was downloading virtually anything as soon as it's available.
Then download all the things.
It's there are a lot of scripts that allow you to take, say, TV shows and movies. And
let's back up for a second. Mm-hmm. Let's back up and just say that there are a lot of really great ways to download things now, especially big files.
Yeah,
we have things like BitTorrent, we have things like Usenet. Mm-hmm. and they're fantastic. The problem comes when you're downloading something repeatedly, like you mentioned, like a TV
like a show.
Or an ebook or anything that comes out regularly in you know, torrent form or whatever. It's difficult to you don't want to have to go back and do that manually all the time.
Yeah, and you can, or you maybe it's not available yet, but you know it's going to be available soon,
and you want to put it in a watch list every day.
Yeah, if you have if there's a particular band that you like to listen to,
yeah,
and they have a new album coming out, and you want to have it, you want to be reminded that it's coming out. There are scripts where you can put put in the music that you want to listen to at some point in the future.
So you automated all of this.
Well,
with a number of programs.
Yeah, with a number of these scripts. There's Sick Beer, there's Couch Potato, there's Headphones is the music one. There's one for comic books, there's one for ebooks, and then there's something called FlexGet, which you actually told me about.
I did. And I'd never used it, but I discovered it, and I thought it looked really cool. I just didn't know what I would use it for.
It's if there's anything else you want to download that comes off an RSS feed, or even if it's on an HTML page, you can basically write a little script, is probably pushing it too far, a description in a language called YAML, which is like RS. It's like writing XML, but a lot easier. and this FlexGet has a format that it reads, and it reads it in YAML, and it tells you what. You basically tell it, get this stuff from this feed and under these conditions, and then it just does it.
And you know, something that kind of what the reason I thought that was so cool is that there are already, you can already, you know, any torrent client has RSS built in these days, or a lot of them do, and you can just get an RSS feed of a particular torrent user or something and funnel that into your torrent client, and it will download those torrents as soon as they're available. But a lot of, like, I remember Demonoid's down now, but when Demonoid was up, its RSS feeds actually didn't work that way. You couldn't actually download things automatically. They didn't want that stress on their servers. FlexGet, in theory, would allow you to do that, right?
Yeah.
Because it would say, follow this RSS feed of the person's, you know, the person's torrents as they upload them, but then look through that HTML page and actually grab the torrent for me.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
All right, so let's just briefly touch on ethics here. These programs are most certainly designed around downloading content which may or may not be illegal. There are
content that may or may not be copyrighted and thus the act may be illegal.
Yes.
Not illegal,
yes.
Content.
Yes, my bad. this is what you can use them for if you are a shining example of morality. There, FlexGet, for example, FlexGet is all good because you specify what you want to download. That's up to you.
It can be like pictures from Facebook.
Yeah, you can. You
any should be kind of cool.
You can. If that's what you want to do, get social folders, but that's a lot easier. But there's I mean, like, if there's anything in particular, if you have a weird, obscure thing or not, you can just tell FlexGet to do whatever you want. When it comes to movies and music, these apps are really good at tracking release dates. So if you're not, and they also do download legal things. It's not, mm-hmm. I mean, you choose, you right, tell not, it what you want.
Not all music and movies are illegal to download yes. freely. A lot of bands are releasing their stuff
yeah.
on like BitTorrent these days. Yeah, just so you, it's easy to.
You put into it what you want to put into it. It's not, the services are not going to, you know, they're not forcing you to.
They're not inherently illegal, and you're not going to get arrested for using them if you're yeah. not using them to download pirated yeah. content.
And there's really no good reason to download music legally anymore. I don't think that there's a good argument for the most part, because you can just, it's so easy to buy it online.
It's so easy and to it's buy so it. Cheap. And so easy to try it online with things like Spotify, yeah, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yes. But there are. But in terms of tracking music releases, which I think is more worthwhile than movies, for example, but mm-hmm. both are if you want to keep on top of it. But I think the music releases are especially applicable because you probably listen to a lot more music than movies.
Yeah.
Than watch movies.
Well,
so.
And the other thing that these all do, and this is and I actually use them for this, is that they. We'll automatically funnel your files through a renaming system.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, if I rip a TV show off of a DVD and I yeah. have, like, I don't want to have to go through and, like, type in everything myself. I kind of just put in, like, season one, episode one or whatever. And then I can funnel it through something like Sickbeard and just say, like, hey, here are these files. It'll do all the post-processing for me and then send them to XBMC. So that they're like formatted really nicely, so I can either view them from, you know, Windows Explorer if I'm on my computer, but XBMC grabs all the data really nicely too.
Yeah,
and so headphones does the same thing.
If you have, I mean, nowadays ripping is fast, but it's tedious and takes some time. If you have copies of DVDs or Blu-rays of TV shows or movies or whatever, or you have CDs or you bought MP3s, and you just want a digital copy and you don't want to deal with sitting there and ripping it, then that's another thing these programs are for, because you already own it. And it's
that's still technically illegal though, right? I'm sorry, you're talking about downloading these.
It's yeah,
if
you download them with the programs, it's
certainly illegal. But it's not necessarily immoral, is what you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah.
It's still faster than sitting there and ripping it yourself.
I mean, I kind of look at it this way. You bought it.
Yeah.
You want a digital copy. You would rather have someone who's good at ripping it, having
yeah.
done that, and it's faster to download it and not think about it.
Yep.
I mean, I don't see. Why anyone would really have much of an issue with that.
No, I mean, you know, I agree. And that's their prerogative. Although, mm-hmm. if you really do want to rip your own Blu-rays and do it well, we have a guide for that. And we'll put it in the show notes. And just for you.
We'll even tell you at the end of this episode where you can find the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people...
Lifehacker.com/the show.
Well, now you ruin the surprise.
Surprise!
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Moving on.
Yeah, Spotify and RDO. You had a terrible experience with these services.
Okay, so related to this whole music thing. So I'm a music junkie, and I love my MP3s, and I love ripping music and like all this stuff. I actually have a lot of actual CDs. I still buy a lot of physical CDs. And I really wanted to give services like Spotify and RDO a shot, because everyone is talking about how they're like the future of music and they're amazing. And like, and you know, Adam Pash, who unfortunately isn't with us this week, is using RDO full time.
Like he's dead.
I know. Sorry. He's out of town. He's not dead. He's very alive. But he's using RDO full time as his, you know, music listening. And so I wanted to like actually try it. And I thought that this would be really easy. And here's how I thought this was going to go and how it actually went. How I thought it was going to go. I thought that I could just fire up Spotify. It would scan my iTunes library for music. And then I could essentially pay for a premium subscription, sync any songs that Spotify didn't have, like my obscure or rare tracks, or just, you know, I listen to some weird genres, so maybe they don't have all the dubstep I listen to. I can sync those few songs down to my iPod, and then just use Spotify on my iPod, have all of my, you know, have my library there, be able to search my favorite artists. It would either stream it from Spotify, or if it didn't have it on Spotify, play the local file. That is not how it worked. With Spotify, well, first of all, with Ardio, you can't even play local files. So, like, I'm just going to put that out there right now. Ardio disappointed me hugely because it has no way of playing your local files, which means I either am streaming from Ardio, or if Ardio has something, or if Ardio doesn't have something that I want, I have to go to a whole new player.
And the other thing is...
So, screw that.
The other thing that I really don't like about... I'm just going to interject this really quickly.
Please do.
Let's say you go through the trouble of syncing the files that these services can't play, especially in the case of Ardio. You have a separate music player on your phone or on your computer that has all the files that Ardio doesn't have. Ardio, you know, renegotiates its contracts, suddenly doesn't have a bunch of music, and then you go to find it in there, you think it's there, and wait, why are these files missing from my playlist?
I can imagine.
And then you have to sync that back. I mean, it's like...
But so I thought that I could just sync those tracks with Spotify and use Spotify on my iPhone as my main music player, you know, and it would have those few local files. Spotify has no method for just filtering out the songs that it doesn't have. I really essentially have to sync all of my local files or none of them, which means that I'm still syncing my entire iPod or like my entire 30 gig music library, you know. Or unless I wanted to go through it one by one and pick out all this, like find all the songs Spotify didn't have, put them on a playlist, and then sync that playlist. This is the other problem. Spotify's mobile player is completely playlist based. It has no way of browsing by album or artist. You can search Spotify's database, but that's it. I cannot browse like the stuff I already have. So if I don't know what I listen to, if I don't know what I want to listen to, I can't just like pick it. And if I wanted to sync those local files down, I can't browse those either. I have to put them all into a playlist, then sync that playlist, and then browse that unorganized playlist to play them or search for them. It's just horribly put together in my mind. And there are definitely some people, and a lot of people mentioned in the comments of this rant that I posted, that they have mostly switched. And it all depends on how you listen to music, I think, and what kind of things you're willing to deal with. But for me, it was just not at all what I expected, and it was a total deal killer. And I think that these are simple things that Spotify and Ardio could do to get so many more people using their premium service. Because even if you're still buying albums, $10 a month is not that much to pay, especially if it means that you could just buy, if I could buy the 8 gig iPhone, I guess now that's 16, if I could buy the 16 gig iPhone instead of the 64 gigs, I saved $200 on the purchase of my iPhone. $10 a month over 2 years is, what, $2,400, around the same price. You're essentially just paying for the ability, paying for that huge library and the ability to stream without having to buy a bigger iPhone.
Yeah,
and that's how I justify the cost to myself. If that makes any sense.
Well, even still, I mean, it's not a lot of money, and if it's a good service and it works, if it worked the way you described, the way you wanted it to work, then I think that's an easy sell to people because it's like, here, you can have everything plus the music you want without any hassle. If that were the way it worked, then it would be good.
The bottom line was this, is that everyone likes to complain about how, oh, Spotify and Ardio are missing these artists I don't listen to or whatever. But that's always going to be a problem. Your net, like, no service is ever going to be able to encompass all of the music in the world. The problem is that Spotify doesn't have a good solution to that initial problem. Spotify doesn't have a good way of making up for that. And that's why I can't use it to actually replace my music library, like everyone's saying it's supposed to be able to do.
Yeah, and that's too bad. Here's what I'm hoping, just before we move on. I look at services like iTunes Match and Amazon Cloud Player, which I'm always rooting for Amazon first in this one because they try so hard and I like them. But they both have matching services, and they both have an incredibly large library. And I wish, and you can have apps on your devices, whatever they may be, especially in the case of Amazon, because that's across all platforms for the most part, mm-hmm. where you can basically buy the songs and have them downloaded to your cloud library or saved in your cloud library, and you can stream them from there, download them to your computer or whatever. So it's all good for buying. Same things with iTunes Match. If you buy on there, you can match it on all your other devices. But they have a capacity for streaming where you're already paying $25 a year. If you paid more than that, you would have access potentially to a large streaming library.
Yeah.
And that would be really cool if there was like another tier where you could actually stream music, because that the library is already there. The infrastructure is already there. You could basically just download files to your devices. You wouldn't even have to stream them necessarily.
Yep.
And then you could just, and it could be, and those things would just get deleted if you stop subscribing to it.
Yeah. I'm just shocked no one's ever like created anything like that yet. And you know, I still think that the Zoom Pass was such a great idea, and that didn't catch on.
It was a great idea.
You pay $10 a month, and you get to actually own one of those albums when the month is over. Mm-hmm. If I'm correct, and that's what it was. That's genius, and no one makes me angry. Okay, I'm gonna get way too angry if we don't stop talking about this. So let's move on.
Well, let's talk
and talk about something fun.
Let's get rid of the iPhone. No, well,
that doesn't make sense.
No, let's get rid of our carriers and get an iPhone. That's what we're talking about. I posted, I guess, three iPhone releases that you can get one for free if you sell your iPhone because you are suddenly off contract, and then you can sell an off contract phone for way more money,
which costs more than people realize.
Yeah, because if you sell off contract, you get pretty much an extra $200 on top of whatever it's worth,
mm-hmm.
and then you can and people will buy that on Craigslist or eBay or whatever. And then you can use that money to effectively buy a new free iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
This has become more of a problem recently because contracts are not what they used to be. You used to be able, when it was just AT&T, you used to be able to get a new iPhone every year, and then your old one was off contract. So yeah, you could the process worked a bit better. Now the problem is sometimes you're stuck on a contract for 2 years or a year and 2 months, which was the case for me last time for some reason. Someone else, I don't remember their name, but they figured out that they called up AT&T and said, "This is kind of silly. I've got two iPhones. It would cost $320 for my to sever my contract, and I believe in the case of if you had one iPhone, it would be $160 because it goes down every month.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to pay that much. But if I bought a new iPhone from you." Then if I bought a new iPhone from you, I'd have to pay $200 to $300 depending on the phone on top of that price plus taxes and all of that. I would have to pay all that money on top of the cost of the actual phone.
Okay.
So it would be more expensive to buy a new phone and stick with your carrier than to pay an early termination fee and get the subsidized cost from another carrier.
Yes.
So
that does make sense.
So it doesn't make sense to stick with your carrier after a year because it's just more. It costs you more if you want to get a new phone.
If you're dead set on getting the newest phone, then it actually is cheaper to switch to another carrier than to buy off contract.
So what this this came from a site. I'm looking this up right now. This came from an Apple stock site called Bullish Cross, and they talked to six, I believe it was six AT&T representatives until someone said, "Oh yeah, that is stupid," and gave them a credit for $178 or something to stick around, but with no conditions.
That's nice.
They're like, "Here's a $178 credit on your account.
Buy a new iPhone.
Do whatever you want now. You can leave, or you could get a new iPhone." And so they left, and more than half of their early termination fee was paid for by AT&T.
Oh, brilliant.
AT&T didn't put any restrictions on this. I mean, it's on one hand, that's kind of, you know, I mean, it's a little the ethical decision there is a little, yeah, because you're screwing over the phone company out of $178.
Yeah,
you can decide if you think that's a bad thing or not.
Either way, it's still cheaper to switch.
That's just
a little bonus if you really want to stick it to them.
Yeah, or if you like your carrier. Like, I don't have any problems with AT&T personally. They've never been an issue for me. If you want to stick with them, call them up. Tell them, hey, I've got, I want to upgrade my phone, but it's cheaper if I go with Verizon than stay with you. So give me a credit.
Is there anything you can do? Yeah.
Yeah, and if you talk to,
and sometimes they'll say no.
Six or seven people.
Yeah,
apparently.
And you know, and I found in dealing with customer service like this, it all depends on the person you get. So if at first you don't succeed, try again.
And be nice, though.
And be super nice, because it's not like, yeah, you don't want to get mad at them. It's just like, this is stupid. I really want to stick with you guys, but I kind of want the iPhone 5 more.
Yeah, and no one wants to help a jerk.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's just all about being nice and being persistent with different people until you kind of, someone will help you out, hopefully.
Yeah, and maybe you'll get a cheap iPhone out of it.
Yeah, it's pretty clever workaround to a very stupid system, though.
Yeah.
Lastly, speaking of the iPhone, if you don't want to upgrade your iPhone, but your old iPhone is a little iffy, if, say, your phone's buttons are broken, my girlfriend, for example.
Oh, I was like, what happened to your phone?
No, my phone's a little iffy, but my girlfriend's phone, her home button is legit pretty borked. It works like 20% of the time. The rest of the time, the home button just does nothing. And so in her time waiting for the iPhone 5, we discovered that there's a feature on the iPhone called Assistive Touch that basically is just an on-screen home button. And so I looked up, there's also XDA posted recently some apps that do something similar for Android. So we just did a post on the little software tweaks that help you out if you break any of your, or rather if your phone wears out any of its buttons, the power button, the volume buttons, the home button, even those little touch buttons on the bottom of an Android phone. There are ways to fix all of that, or not necessarily fix, you could go on iFixit or something and learn how to replace that hardware. But if you just need something to kind of get you through the next few months, there are apps you can download or tweaks you can enable that will make it okay. So you can go check that out.
That's great.
On our site. Yeah, it's pretty, you know, and it's not perfect. It's still, you know, it takes a little longer to hit that on-screen home button, and then because you have to tap two things. But it's
a home button is better than no home button.
Exactly. It's, you know, and it takes a phone that's essentially useless and turns it into a phone that you can at least bear for another few months, you know, while you wait for your ability to upgrade to a new one.
Cool. Questions?
And that is all of our news and top stories. So let's move on to some questions.
All right. Well, Mike writes, after having lots of Windows issues recently and finding that all my components are compatible, I decided I'm going to convert my computer to a Hackintosh.
Yay.
I have never... What are you saying yay for? You like Windows.
I know, but I like Hackintoshes too.
All right. I have never owned a Mac before, so I'm not sure about the process of being able to access the files on my data drives after I am running OS X on the machine. I have an SSD as my boot drive, but I have three other internal drives that I do not want to lose access to. Are there any measures I need to take prior to making the switch to ensure that I have access to all my files? Yes. You want to do this?
Okay. So... We've done kind of a few things about this, but the best way to do this is probably just going to be to get an external drive or an extra hard drive that's installed in your desktop. Drag all of your important files. You could probably just drag your entire user folder, all your documents, music, movies, all that stuff should all be in there, to the external drive. Install OS X, do a clean slate, and then put those files back into your home folder. And the best way to do that is to format that external or internal drive as XFAT. XFAT is something that has been around for a while, but I just discovered recently because, I don't know, I'm out of the loop.
It's not used enough.
It's, like, so good. So the only problem with migrating your stuff, and actually, you know what, you probably could just do an NTFS drive because you only need to be able to read when you're on OS X and drag those files over. But XFAT, once you switch to a Hackintosh, it's just nice to have XFAT drives. Which essentially are readable and writable on both Windows and OS X. That's as simple as you can format an XFAT drive on both Windows and OS X, and you can
and no file size limits really.
And there are no file size limits, so it's like FAT32 but without the limits.
Without the 4 gigabyte limit. Yeah. So I think there might be like a 32 gigabyte limit or something like that, but nothing you're gonna brush up against in this age.
Yeah. So that's just a nice little bonus tidbit. But you honestly don't even have to do that if you're migrating your files.
Mm-hmm.
Just get an external drive, format it as XFAT or NTFS, drag your files down. Drag them back when you finish installing the Hackintosh. You just essentially need to make sure they're not on the drive you're using for your operating system.
Yeah, and I think if you
so they don't get erased.
This is
also back up your data regularly.
Yeah,
I mean that's just a good idea.
But this is definitely the best way to go. I think if you want to go another route in that you don't want to buy an external drive if you don't have one. You can get, I think there's a plugin called Mac NTFS that's based on Fuse, And yes. I don't know if that actually exists, and or I should say still exists. I've used it before. But there are plugins where you can actually read and write NTFS drives on the Mac.
Oh, okay. I think I misread the question. So his data is already on
his data is already drives, on those drives,
and he doesn't want to. Okay,
so, no, but you're right to suggest that though. I mean, yes, that's what he should do.
You should still probably migrate those to an HFS formatted drive, just because it's going to be easier once you. Or XFAT once you you install the Hackintosh. But yes, if you just want to, if you don't want to have to mess with them too much, you can enable write access in OS X with the new Fuse driver. Yeah. So that's an option too. And you know but what?
I think they cost money.
They might. I'm going to put a link in the show notes because I've actually done a feature on accessing your data from any operating system without having to reformat drives. So I will put that in the show notes and you can figure it out from there, but it shouldn't be too hard, especially if your data is already on those drives. It should be a pretty easy switch. It'll just be a lot of waiting while you transfer that data.
Yeah. All right. Well, our next question comes from a caller.
Hello, Lifehacker. My name is Martin. I'm calling from the very wet UK at the moment. I'm wondering, I use at work a desktop computer, also a laptop computer, and I use my tablet as well. And I'm wondering if there's any way that I can actually share the, well, not share, sorry, if I can set up the desktop screen so that there's the same over each of my computers. That is, icons in the same place, sectioned out the way I have them, over everything. Is there a file that I can share to make that happen? This might be the simplest question in the world, I don't know, but I can't find a solution to it. Hope you can help. Cheers, bye.
So basically what he wants to do is he has multiple computers and he has a desktop that he wants to be exactly the same on all of them.
Yes, and that's sort of possible.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible down to the details that he's saying. You can sync the files on your desktop between multiple computers. That's very simple to do with Dropbox. Mm-hmm. We've done a post on it before. It's in the show notes. Essentially, you'll just need to create a symlink. Or a hard link in your Dropbox folder that links to your current desktop, or vice versa, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And that desktop should be able to sync across all your computers pretty easily.
Yep.
The problem is that there aren't easy ways to make sure that the icons are all in the same layout and stuff like that, as he's saying.
Well, I don't know how this works on Windows, but on Mac you could sync the desktop preferences file. I wouldn't recommend doing that because syncing system preference files with Dropbox is a bad idea.
Yeah,
because there'll be conflicts, and then you'll have about 20 files that none of which work on your.
Yeah, that's probably going to cause more problems than it solves.
Yeah, so don't do that. But I'm guessing, I don't know how, it seems to be that the best way is just to sync the folder.
Yes. And so the icons won't line up the same. What you can do, and this challenge just came to mind, and you might have to let me know if there's a Mac alternative or equivalent of this, but if you have fences on multiple computers, you could at least sort out the files by, you know, file type or date modified or something like that into their own little sections. Mm-hmm. And if you have the same rules applied on both computers, then your desktops will look mostly the same.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something to check out. And I think you actually done a feature on organizing your desktop with things like fences, and maybe there's an equivalent on OS X.
I don't know of anything on OS X that works quite like fences.
So that'll unfortunately only work if you have multiple Windows computers.
But I mean, in OS X, you can just tell the desktop to be like go in alphabetical order, or
yeah, that's true too.
And that's just what I do. So
and it's probably not
mine. Will look the same because of that.
Yeah, and it won't necessarily be ideal, but at least it'll be uniform across your system. So it's kind of about your priorities.
Yeah, so it might not. The layout may not be perfect, but you can create symlinks to the things that you want to actually sync, and that's all good. All
right, cool.
All right, so next question is from somebody. I don't have a name for them, but they. I apologize. They wanted to be referred to as "I don't want his money,"
and that'll make sense in just a second.
Yeah, I don't want his money rights. Someone signed up for the PlayStation Network with my email address, and ever since then, I've been getting emails about everything they purchase on the PlayStation Network. I have the username, and I'm pretty sure I can get full control of his account with a password reset, but I don't even want to touch it. I don't have a way to contact them. It must be a one-off character off of my email or something. and I don't really know how to explain this to PSN support. What would you suggest I do?
So essentially, what this was pretty confusing. I had to read this like 5 times before I got it. What happened is that this someone signed up for the PlayStation Network with this reader's email address. And it wasn't like an identity theft thing. He doesn't have his credit card.
It was a typo.
It's just a typo because this person who is the person who's on the PlayStation Network is using his own credit card and stuff to buy the games. Mm-hmm. He's just not getting any of the correct emails for this account. He probably doesn't even realize he signed up with the wrong email. Yeah. You know, maybe their names are one letter off or something. So it's kind of funny. I probably wouldn't find it so funny if I were in the situation, but I can understand not wanting to get full control of the account just with a password reset, because then essentially you're stealing their identity. Mm-hmm. But I think you just have to contact PlayStation Network support. I know you said you didn't want to do that, but that's really all you can do in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, if he says he doesn't know how to explain that to them,
you explain it to us.
Yeah, I think you call them up or email them or whatever and say, listen, this is my email. This is someone signed up using my email. It's not me. They don't know that they made this mistake. There, it's probably a typo, but I can't contact them and tell them this. I need you to contact them and tell them this for me, because I'm getting their emails and I could have access to their account, and I just don't want it.
Yeah, it's just an inconvenience.
They need to reset their password. They don't need to reset the password. That's what he's trying to avoid. They need to change their email and log into the account and change it.
The problem is they don't know what to change it to. But that's something that PSN support would have to figure out.
They have to contact the guy and tell the guy to do that.
They probably have a phone number on file or something like that. Yeah. The other thing you could just sign up for a PlayStation Network account with a different email address and then send him like a message through PSN, like, hey,
that's clever.
Your account is on my email, dude.
Yeah.
But that sounds like a lot of work, and he might not take it. He might just think it's spam or something. But I mean, you could.
If maybe a couple messages, might think.
Especially if PlayStation Network ends up giving you the runaround. You know, you never know how good someone's support is. I don't know much about PlayStation.
Yeah, but that's a clever idea.
But so that's another like idea, I guess.
Cool.
Anyway,
we have a couple of updates.
We have a couple of follow-ups from last week's. First of all, we had a caller call in last week about kicking his caffeine habit, saying he was drinking like 18 cups of coffee a day, or you know, something insane like that. And Alan, I guess this really hit home for Alan, the only caffeine drinker among us, or among me and you, and him. And so he ended up doing some research and talking to some health experts about the best ways to effectively kick your caffeine habit. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. If you haven't seen it already, go check that out. It actually it was a very good feature, and there's some really good advice in there that we didn't really get to delve into in the last podcast. So if you're still wondering.
Yeah, thanks for the good question, caller. And and we have Alan really came through on that one.
Yeah, he did.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax. The way car buying should be.
So we have one more update. You may remember last week Darren called, or no, he wrote in.
Yes, we are.
I can never remember who's who.
Question.
I mean, who did what?
Yeah.
And said that he would. We made him promise to pull over to the side of the road and scream into the phone. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot. So. Sup, Darren?
Woohoo! Darren Simon, the guy with the Gmail archive question on this week's podcast. Pulled over to the side of the road screaming, woo! Thanks, guys. Good information. I'll see what I can do about setting up my own spam filters. That's true. Viagra would probably get rid of half of it. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Thanks, Darren.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That pretty much made my week. Thanks, Darren.
So we've got some downloads before we call it a day.
All right. First download, LastPass Sentry. It's actually not a download.
It's a,
but it is part of LastPass, which is a download.
Yeah,
if you're not already using LastPass, here's another reason to download and start using LastPass. LastPass just introduced a new feature called LastPass Sentry, that is just automatically turned on everyone's account. You can opt out, but this is something you want. They partnered with Pwnlist, which is this giant database of everyone that has gotten hacked or had security breaches recently. And what they're doing with that, with LastPass Sentry, is they are daily scanning Pwnlist's database and checking it against all of their users' accounts. Now, they're not, you know, looking into your passwords or anything like that. They're basically looking at the list, and if a database gets hacked, they look at the list and they take all the email addresses, match it against the email addresses in LastPass's database. Mm-hmm. And if you have a saved account for that site, LastPass will recognize the match and send you an email notification saying,
change
this,
your password.
Yep, change your password. This account was hacked. You may not have heard about it in the news, but we just matched this up in our database, and you got to go change your stuff.
That's really great.
It's what a great idea, and it's automatically turned on for everyone. You don't need to do anything. It's literally just email notifications. It's just a really nice addition to LastPass. And if you aren't using it, guys, go use it.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's so good. I recently I finally did the thing where I went and updated all of my passwords. I don't know any of them. They're all just in the LastPass database.
I'm never going to go that far.
It's been surprisingly easy.
It's
super easy to just, and it's super easy to just go look them up if you need to log in manually. I have two-factor authentication on LastPass and everything else I use. I just feel so much more secure. And it hasn't really been that much of a pain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's LastPass is really good whether or not you're as paranoid as Whitson or as unparanoid as me.
Yes.
We're on both sides of the extremes.
Yeah.
And come on, hackers, come and get me now. That'll be easy.
The invitation from Adam Duchess. Yeah.
Don't do that, really. but LastPass, they've released a lot of features recently that I feel like are kind of a mixed bag in a lot of ways. I mean, they're probably good if you are really paranoid. But there are a lot of things I'm like, I'm never going to use that, or like, when would that ever happen? But this is just really
just
smart.
Awesome.
So hats off to them.
Yep. Moving on.
We've got two downloads for OS X today. We're just going to go through both of them. One quickly is an update to Growl.
Growl.
Growl. Growl.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing. Growl. Say it again.
Yeah. Growl. It is Growl received a version 2.0 update, which is, if you've been following the development cycle, which you probably haven't because...
What is Growl?
Growl is a notification system.
There you go.
Yeah, let's get to that.
For anyone who doesn't know and wasn't already using it, there's probably like three of you out there.
You probably have been using it and didn't know. If you've been getting notifications from, say, Dropbox, and you don't know why in OS 10.7 or earlier,
you're using Growl. It's Growl. Automatically installed with a lot of applications to kind of keep you up to date on things that are happening.
Yeah, but when Notification Center came out, it's like, oh, now I have Growl, and notifications.
Two separate notifications been running, which is just kind of annoying.
But version 2.0 of this app that I can't say the name of properly, it works with Notification Center. So you can just say, hey, I want Growl notifications, or I want Notification Center notifications, and it's just a switch you flip on, which is really great. Except you have to wait for all the developers to put the new framework into their apps, so it actually doesn't work with anything yet. But
so it's not just like an automatic thing. Can't just send them to Notification Center?
No, I don't know why, but it needs a new framework to so it knows to differentiate on different operating systems and so
on. But that's nice, and you know, everyone
eventually, it's an update you will want someday.
Yeah, so I mean, go download it now. It's gonna make your life easier, hopefully in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, and the other thing is it also supports Boxcar and Prowl. I can say that.
Oh yes, which are Growl, other Growl programs that integrate well with Growl that people use.
Yeah, they
Growl pushes Growl notifications to
your
phone
or tablet or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's really good because it's built in now.
Cool.
Also for OS X, we have Glow for Facebook, which puts Facebook notifications in your menu bar, and that does work with Notification Center.
Awesome.
If you want to be updated about messages, any of the things that are on the top of the bar, messages, someone posted on your timeline, whatever.
Yeah.
It'll tell you. It'll be in the menu bar. You can go in Notification Center, or you can just grab it from the menu bar.
Nice. Cool. All right, moving on. We have Q for iOS. And I don't know if we've talked about this on the show, but we have talked about it on the site before. Q is this cool app for iOS that essentially takes your calendars, whether from your iCal or Google Calendar or a service like that, and integrates it with your email, your contacts, Dropbox, Google Docs, any other service you want to connect to it, and essentially creates this really nice daily calendar setup for you. It's kind of like the agenda view in iCal, where you can just see what's coming up during the day. But every event, it will say like, oh, this event was posted in your shared calendar by this coworker. Here's that coworker's email address, phone number, any emails that we found that might pertain to this event. Everything you could possibly want to know is in one place. So if I'm heading to a party, I don't need to go looking in Facebook or my email, trying to find out what the address is or this person's phone number. I open up Q, it's already found all that information for me and it's right there. It's very cool. The new update has improved it a lot. You can tell it which calendars you want notifications for, which calendars you want to sync, and it's got a lot of bug fixes and performance improvements. Yeah, when it first came out, it was a little buggy for me. If you tried it out and you didn't like it, check it out again.
Yeah, that was me, but Whitson's convinced me to give it another shot now that the bugs are gone.
Well, it was me too. I was like, this is really cool and I'm gonna keep an eye on it. The other thing is the first time you use it, it might take like a day to get all of your calendar information just because that's so much data for it to sync and organize. So don't write it off too quickly.
So lastly, we have Chameleon Launcher. Is it Chameleon Launcher? It's Chameleon.
Chameleon.
Something. Yeah, it's I've just been calling it Chameleon, but it's been a very hyped up home screen for Android tablets that I was a little skeptical about. I had only heard about it when it launched the other day. Whitson, you have been following.
People have been
longer.
Talking about this for a while. We knew it was going to be $10, and everyone was like, kind of an expensive launcher, but it's a complete overhaul of your tablet's home screen for Android.
And it's really very cool. It's very widget-based. There's a lot of really neat stuff that you can do with it. The way you have a little dock of apps at the bottom, you can have location-based home screens that just it shows the one based on where you are. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. It's also very expensive for what it is. It's $10. So that's the downside. But
if you go check out the screenshots, you'll see why.
Yeah, you'll understand. I mean, it really is the best home screen experience on Android. All right, well, that's all we've got. Thanks for listening, and just a reminder to rate us on iTunes now that our sound quality isn't as horrible as it once was.
we need more listeners.
Yeah.
Fire up the hive or something. I don't know. Armies. I don't know what we call our army of readers. But yeah, please go leave us a rating on iTunes. That'd be nice. You guys can also follow us on Twitter at Lifehacker. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker and on Google+ at plus.google.com/plus/lifehacker. Those URLs are clearly too long to remember. You can also follow all of us individually, me and Adam Dachis, and all the other writers, Alan and Thorne and everyone. You can just check us out at lifehacker.com/about. You can find all of our social media usernames there.
And lovely photos of us all.
Of all of us, yes.
Yeah, lastly, if you haven't known where the show notes are, we realize we never really mention where they are. Whitson, you
constantly mentioned the
surprise
show
earlier,
yeah,
but
sorry.
It's at lifehacker.com/the show, and that'll take you to the most recent episode. But we're going to start adding in a direct link to the show notes in the iTunes RSS feed, on all the RSS feeds. For the podcast, so you will get an actual link to those each time.
Yep, and if you ever have a question about something we talked about on the show, it's probably in the show notes. So
yes, cool. If you have a question that's not, you're going to find out what to do about that right now. If you'd like to ask us a question, send an email to tips+askLHshow@lifehacker.com or give us a call at 347-687-8109. Keep your questions as short as you can so we can keep the show moving right along. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.